Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed, and this man here is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek. How are you?
I have lately been allergic to something. I can't tell what it is.
I had that when I was a lot younger, and you can go to the hospital and get a test done. Do you know what they do?
They put lots of things on your back, different allergy things.
It was on my arm, actually, but they draw lots of little circles on your arm with numbers on, and then they get little vials, and they get out little individual razors, and they dip it in the vial, and then they prick that circle with it, and if it flares up, then you're allergic to it. So they've got little liquid goose and liquid dust and liquid, you know.
Liquid goose?
Liquid goose they've got. I don't know how they've done it, but
when are you ever going to account? I mean, you're going to know if you've met a goose.
Yeah, it's not checking whether you're allergic to liquid goose, because that's not very common. But I think it's like goose down feathers and stuff.
Oh, I forgot about that.
For pillows.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking.
Just geese.
Yeah. That's quite an odd one.
Yeah, yeah. Like orcas. Elephant. Allergic to orcas.
I mean, imagine that. If they tested you for things like geese, you'd have literally thousands of cuts all over your body. Different things.
It was about 40 things, though, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, you can get that done. Like, you can get that done. If you're in trouble.
Well, this is a film podcast.
Yeah.
It's getting towards Christmas, but our listeners might be listening to this throughout different points of the year.
Well, we pre-record these podcasts, so this is actually coming out on Friday when Star Wars will already have been out. We're not going to talk about it this week because it hasn't come out yet. We're in the past, but also
we're just missing Star Wars.
We're just missing it, so just you have a chance to watch it before we clearly spoil the whole thing. But we will be releasing next week's episode on Christmas Day. The 25th of December, and we will talk about Star Wars next week.
No one's going to be listening to it on the 25th of December.
What do you mean? Everyone crowds around the fire and listens to Film Fandango. It's the new tradition. It's Christmas delivered, Mary.
They are showing Star Wars at my local picture house at 1 minute past 12.
Okay, so they can get the... Why isn't everyone doing that? Surely they make a load of money.
It's a good idea, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I'm going on Thursday. I'm going to...
Did it come out Thursday or Friday?
Thursday here, yeah. We get it before America, apparently.
Okay.
I don't know why. But, yes, I'm very much looking forward
to it. I'm going to try and go and see it on Friday if it's not sold everywhere.
Yeah, because it will... The internet... It's one of those films that the internet will just spoil immediately, won't it? I mean, everyone will go, I'm not going to spoil it, but oh my God, I can't believe that
we'll probably spoil it on Christmas Day.
Yeah, we probably will.
It will ruin Christmas. Anyway, I went to the cinema.
What did you see? Was it a sci-fi epic?
No, it was Carol.
Carol. How Christmassy?
There's Christmas bits in it, yeah. There's lots of snow coming down.
Christmas Carol.
There's lots of snow coming down in it, but clearly if you're going to show anywhere outside with snow... It's going to cost an absolute shitload to cover everything. So it's always like the snow started falling.
Yeah.
So it's quite thick, but everywhere's quite green. And I noticed that a few times. I thought, surely this snow would have settled by now. But obviously you can't do it on a hill in the background.
Yeah, it's the same with rain. Rain and snow, very expensive. It's why people in films tend to get, in general, wetter than people on television.
Do you know, I once did a thing where we had snow in it.
Yeah.
Do you know what the company is who makes snow?
No.
It's a company, it's made out of paper.
Is it?
They cover the whole thing. We did a thing set in Narnia. I did a sketch show called Laura, Ben and Him. And I wrote a sketch about a bloke who was trying to find his beers, and he got really pissed off that his wife kept moving around, and he went into his cupboard, he went into Narnia, and the fawn had stolen his beers from his cupboard. But the whole thing was covered in snow, and it's all paper, it's all made of little bits of paper. And
so it, very flammable.
And it was called That Snow Business, the company.
Is that the... Wow, best name, Snow Business.
Best name.
Best
for
name. I've actually heard a story, it might be apocryphal, but I'll spread it around anyway, that Russell Crowe was such a bell end on the filming of Les Miserables that he would sometimes rock up 2 hours late to set, where it would be covered in snow. It would be a set, you know, of Paris covered in the paper you've just described. And he'd be shouting at everyone, just like, "Well, let's get on with this then, come on." And he'd be smoking.
Really?
He'd be smoking in this fucking closed set covered in tiny bits of paper.
Wow. But in the theatre, in this play, the snow comes down from the snow machine.
Yeah.
And if it gets in your mouth, it's horrible, because it's almost like tiny bits of plastic bag that have been ripped up into it.
Right, yeah.
Which is horrible.
Yeah.
Because you swallow it and you're definitely toxic.
Oh, dear.
Well, Carol.
Carol
is set in the 1950s. As that often happens, it's got the same, a real similar feel to it as a film I've very recently seen.
Which, you know, is what?
Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah,
which is,
yeah.
About the Irish girl going
to... They've come out very close to each other,
haven't
they?
Yes, this is set in New York in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And it's a love story. But it's, and one of the characters works in a department store. So there's lots of... it feels very similar to Brooklyn.
Is it like a Bug's Life Ants thing, where the two films have come out at the same time?
There's been a few of these. What was the other one? There was one a couple of years ago, some sort of sci-fi one or something. I can't remember. There's been a few where they're quite similar.
It happens a lot.
White House Down, whatever it is.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Two of them came out at the same time.
What was it?
Both the White House coming down. I can't remember where they were.
Yeah, it was just an assault on the White House and the President being involved,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Basically two
White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah, two in the space of a week. It's a very similar feel in terms of it. It's really slow. It's got a young sort of girl going through, you know, maybe not as naive as a character in Brooklyn, but quite naive, working in a department store, who sort of falls in love. But this is a lesbian story, a lesbian love story.
Right. In the 1950s, I mean, there's conflict already.
Yes, because the... So what it is Rooney Mara plays a young lady.
And she's the girl in the Dragon Tattoo.
In the American Dragon Tattoo.
The remake, really, yes.
Which is one of the few remakes which is equally as good, I would say, as the original.
Is that right? I've not seen any of it.
And Cate Blanchett is playing this woman who's got... going through a divorce with her husband. She's had sort of dalliances in the past.
With ladies?
Yes, and she has a daughter. So it's there are two stories. It's a love story, and it's her and Cate Blanchett's story about the difficulties of the husband and who's going to look after the child. It's very, very slow. It feels a lot like Brooklyn. One thing I've really noticed from this film, I think a lot of time when you watch films set in the 50s, things you take away are quite odd.
Yeah.
And I think what I took away from this film is, why is it that all the cars in the 1950s were really beautiful?
They are. Well, because they weren't safe. That's why.
And
slowly, as you got into the 70s and 80s, and certainly by the 90s, just everything slowly started to look like a Saab. Until now, pretty much all cars look like a Saab. Because it's safe. It's the safest shape.
Why can't they make cars that beautiful, that safe? They're just works of art.
They're stunning, aren't they?
Every single car that comes in. I'm not even someone who... I've got no interest in cars or vehicles or anything like that. But they're so beautiful.
Yeah.
And even the sort of 1950s look of everything looks beautiful. I just think, when did it... Was it just the 70s? But I still think it's now. Everything just looks really shit.
80s cars look shit, didn't they?
Yeah.
Like, the 80s idea of what cool is looks like sheet metal hammered together. Like, it's not things of beauty. Although, I mean, yeah, it's... I'm sort of glad we don't die in horrendous car accidents as often now. But you're right. I mean, there's something...
They're gorgeous.
Yeah. Even something as sort of cute and diminutive as the Mini, you know. Which...
That's one of the good remakes. But the Volkswagen, isn't that... There was a Volkswagen Beetle advert at the start of this.
Yeah.
And I thought, God, the new Beetle just looks shit. You've not managed to catch...
Well, the new Mini
charm
is enormous. It's an enormous car.
I think it's quite a good remake.
It is. It is. It's quite good, but it's not a small car anymore because it needs to be safe. The old Minis, apparently, the strongest part of them was the... I don't know why I'm telling you this anecdote, but was the shaft that held the steering wheel. So if you had a head-on collision, that would just go straight through the driver.
Wow.
But it's a cutesy little fun car, you know. That's why they're all now really boxy, but with curbs.
This is turning to blooming Top Gear.
Well, they should get us on that. We'd be quality. I don't have a driver's license, but that would be good.
So it's quite a long film.
Did it tee you up for Christmas, seeing a lesbian in the snow?
I think it wasn't. It was all unsaid, really.
Right.
And another thing was an odd thing. I mean, it's not really filmed. Like, in the test card, you know, at the start.
Yeah.
Is it called the test card? The sort of the date that tells you the what?
It's the trailers are over sign. With its name and certificate and David Cook's scrawling child's handwriting.
Yes, the certificate sign. Basically said that one scene, there's spoilers here, that one sexual scene in it.
Okay, I know what's going to happen then.
It's almost like you spoiled the... You spoiled the film by saying what it is.
Well, you could almost browse for what you're looking for of an evening by just looking through the certificate information. You just go... mild violent references. No, that doesn't sound like it's for me.
Why do they? You know, before you're going in, what you're looking.
It's pretty much.
It's too late when you're sitting down to go. Oh no, dog gets bummed.
Yeah.
You know, and you take the kids out at that point. You should be told before you go in. So that was quite odd.
Well, it all adds up with the algorithm the BBFC has to the one certificate rating, doesn't it? But
yeah
it does seem odd to just have some spoilers at the beginning of the test.
I've never been in when the film has been directly spoiled by the car. Yeah. And luckily, I've passed on to our listeners.
Part of it should be one shocking twist, just so you're not too shocked and you fall down and have a heart attack.
But Cate Blanchett is brilliant. Rooney Mara is excellent as well. But nothing, and that was my main criticism of Brooklyn. Brooklyn was so slow, and in one of the leads, the bloke in it was shit. This bit you've got, I think, better. These two are both brilliant. But
who's the husband?
The husband is played by Kyle Chandler. He plays dad in Super 8, and he's been in lots of things.
Oh,
he's
okay.
He's in American football sort of a series on. What's it called?
Friday Night Lights.
I think he's in that as well.
Okay.
But it's just about those two. Just not enough really happened. There are two brilliant scenes. I think the final scene is absolutely superb. And there's a scene where Cate Blanchett's arguing with Carl Chandler, which is just really wonderful, really moving scenes.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if you've got these moments of drama, which are brilliant, why can't you just do more of that in it? It was so just mildly, it's a suggestion and just the restraint. A bit like a Jane Austen novel set in the 50s where nothing really happened. It's all in the sort of the looks and the language and a fleeting touch here and a suggestive look, you know, or, you know, smile at the corner of someone's lips, which is good.
Yeah.
But this is a 2-hour long film.
Yeah.
And I think they could have pushed it a bit more. I mean, the 50s... I felt really at home in the... I like watching... It's beautiful to watch. The clothing's beautiful.
Yeah.
The style of it's wonderful. The 1950s look of everything, the cars.
Yeah.
You just feel a bit more peaceful.
What I realised something watching the trailer for Carol, which is, depending on which one it is, but is long, but it's an entirely montage, you know, shots of looks between people and there's no story in the trailer at all, but it goes on for forever. And I'd be interested if this is the case. I just got the sense that it's stunningly acted and all looks beautiful, but because of how... because of the quality of cameras and images these days, it all looks like an incredibly high production value music video or advert for a department store. I didn't feel like I would get any sense of a reality to it because it's all so beautiful every single frame. Do you know what I mean? You can detach from reality by making everything stunning.
Yeah, I thought that. I bumped into someone who else had seen it on the way here, And they made a really good point. They said they didn't know which was the main story in it.
Right.
Whether it was Cate Blanchett's story or Rooney Mara's story. And it sort of flickered between them both. And I agree with that, that it didn't have... You didn't know if... Is it a story about sort of Rooney Mara finding herself and her sexuality? Is it a story of Cate Blanchett, you know, finding her independence in an age where it's difficult to get? And they're really good... I prefer it to Brooklyn, which I thought Brooklyn was... I thought something was going to happen and never really happened. But this is... It has talks of Oscar talk about it. Right. Carol does. And I don't think it's up there. I give it 7 Marics.
Any film with an already famous person in that their character's name is the title is up for Oscars, isn't it?
Carol's a terrible name for a film.
It is terrible. The worst titled film of this year, though, I still think is Spring, which is tells you absolutely nothing about it, and it's actually a supernatural horror romance. And Spring, and it's good, and the title's absolutely appalling.
But I'm a bit worried that Cate Blanchett's clearly had some work done on her cheeks, I think.
Oh, really?
Filler. And I just think you don't need, and as much as you feel sad that she needs to do that.
Although, these days, you probably, it'd be hard to tell whether it's surgery or whether it's digital tinkering afterwards. I mean, I've heard stories about the amount of touching up that, whether the actor has any control over that or not, but that Keira Knightley or Sandra Bullock or whoever gets when they're in films, you know?
Yeah. But I do think there's something in it. I mean, I do... Romances, as romances go, I've just finished reading Fingersmith, which I didn't even realise was a...
Fingersmith?
Have you read it? Have you heard of it?
No.
By Sarah Waters.
Is it filthy?
No, it's set in the Victorian times. That's another lesbian romance as well. I really enjoyed it.
She's a Fingersmith. Is that what she's known for?
There's a pickpockets, they were called.
Oh, right, okay. But there's a double meaning in that title, isn't
there? Are you making it really queen? I don't really like to go down that.
The only information I've got to go on is it's called Fingersmith and it's a lesbian romance. But I mean, what else are you going to do?
I enjoy.
Right.
The good thing about it, I enjoy good lesbian romance.
Turns out you do. Although you didn't enjoy the sex scene in Where's the Warmest Colour.
I don't like the sex scene.
How was the one sexual scene in this one?
I mean, it was just. It was more. I think it was more delicately handled.
Yes. Well, also there was stuff in the press around Blue's the Warmest Colour as well about how they had sort of been taken. The actresses had been taken advantage of by the director in the filming of that scene, and so it probably adds a certain level of discomfort to watching it as well. The fact that you know they were made to do this scene for days.
I just think they've been. I think in terms of. The people in love. What's really great about this film is I think it captures two people in love really well.
Yeah.
Which Blue is the Warmest Colour did brilliantly as well. Captures that feeling of what I associate with you know, what I think is the truest point to actually make, you know, showing love on a film. Whereas most Roman blokes, I mean, the bloke's just trying to bone someone.
Yeah. But they have chemistry, do they? Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara?
It just felt like it could have gone another... It felt that a lot of the ingredients were there for a great film. But I think maybe it was a story. There weren't enough of these juicy...
Yeah.
Or maybe it was the director.
So how many Marics would
7
you
give? 7 Marics.
7 Marics for Carol. Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see whether the Oscars come a-knocking for Cate Blanchett. She's certainly now in the... she's certainly now of that sort of cadre of actors who could potentially
cadre?
Get...
Cadre?
Is it not a cadre? What would you call a group of actors?
I've never even heard of cadre.
You've not heard of a cadre? C-A-D-R-E?
I'm looking up now.
Do it. But of actors who couldn't potentially get nominated for an Oscar whenever they do a film, you know?
Cadre. A small group of people specially trained for a particular purpose or profession.
There you go.
A cadre of professional managers.
There you go. So it was the correct word. What are you
on
about?
A group of activists in a communist or other revolutionary organisation.
Well, that's a specific.
Here's an example. He was an activist in the cadre. Where we go. I've learned a new word.
Welcome to Word Wang Dango.
New word.
Yeah.
Cadre.
Cadre.
Repeat.
There you go.
Cadre.
Yeah, there you
C-A-D-R-E. Padre.
Oh, you're welcome. Merry Christmas. That's my gift to you.
Well, we've had a really good Christmas present. I'm moving on to the letter section.
Do it. Do it. Actually, with that in mind, we've received a...
That's what I was talking about, the really good Christmas present.
Oh, right. You want to read that one first? Yeah, do it.
Yeah. This is from Ben Evans, who kind of police cars as usual. Hi, Marek, David and Buddy, and other nearby animals and or guests. I realise this isn't the Answer Me this podcast, but I've done what David suggested a couple of weeks ago and composed some music to complement Marek's wonderful singing and create an amazing jingle for your letter section. Thank you for your constant inadvertent Netflix plugging. Oh, through your constant inadvertent Netflix plugging, I've recently signed up. Anyway, I've received an email from Netflix entitled, "We've just ordered a film you might like, A Very Murray Christmas." I'm afraid Netflix were wrong. I had to turn it off after 10 minutes, but it got me thinking, apart from this, has Bill Murray ever been in a bad film? I managed to think of 7 good films without the use of the internet and can't think of a bad one. Hope you like the song and keep watching the films. Can we just play this song first of all?
Yes, here is our new letters jingle.
Thank you, Ben Evans. This really made my day.
Let's listen to it now.
Thank you, Ben Evans.
We have a jingle.
And we've got a shorter version, which, if you don't like that, you'll hear the shorter version every week.
Every bloody week.
Bill Murray film.
Bill Murray. Well, we can talk about that. I mean, A Very Murray Christmas has been made especially for Netflix and is a sort of... It's a TV Christmas special, really, not a movie, but it's directed by Sofia Coppola, and it's just Bill Murray and a load of celebrities doing a sort of Christmas show. I've not watched it yet, but the Netflix are pushing it quite hard because Bill Murray's not done much in a while, so, and he's got that sort of charming lounge singer feel to him, and he's there with a, you know, with a piano and in a suit and all of that, and gets people on to sing Christmas songs. It looks quite fun, but I might watch it. It's not really a movie, though, I don't think.
I'm looking through his IMDb list, and I can't think of anything that is rubbish. I've not seen Osmosis Jones. And I've not seen Garfield 2.
Oh, no, A Tale of Two Kitties. No, I mean, Garfield 1 isn't strong.
He was only the voice of that, so I forgive him for that.
Well, you know why he did the voice, though?
No.
Because the guy who originally did the voice on the cartoons was doing a Bill Murray impression and it annoyed him he didn't get any money for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've just seen on his IMDb thing, he's appearing in Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Well, rumoured or actually?
He's on the list here.
Oh, wow, because he wasn't going to for ages.
I did see one I thought was really boring called Hyde Park on the Hudson. Have you seen that?
Hyde Park on Hudson, no. It looked boring from the trailer. He plays the president, doesn't he?
Yeah, he plays the president, and they go and visit... the King and Queen visit them.
Right.
It's just a bit boring.
All right. He's never boring in stuff, though, is he?
He was still good. Yeah, no, he's still entertaining to watch and everything.
Like, yeah, he is just good. Have you seen Coffee and Cigarettes, which is hit and miss? Jim Jarmusch anthology film of lots of little black and white shorts of people sharing coffee and cigarettes and just talking to each other. Some of them are fantastic,
yeah.
But he's with RZA and GZA of the Wu-Tang Clan. But he's serving them coffee and they recognise him as Ghostbusting Bill Murray, and he's trying to pretend he's not who he is.
Is it good?
It's really good, yeah.
Well, thank you, Ben Evans. I hope we... went some way to answering your question.
Have we got more letters since we've had the jingle?
Yes, here is one. Some people like writing letters.
Okay, this is from Christopher Dodd. And he says, please read this out in the voice of a Kuzadasi Turkish bazaar salesman. What's a Kuzadasi?
Some kebabs, probably.
Can you do a Turkish?
Well, I've given you the computer, so...
Give me a quick blast of Turkish. What's it?
I can't really do it. It's a lot of Zs.
Turkish.
It's a lot of Zs and...
It's Turkish.
And it's all in the back of your throat, like you're coughing up. I mean, it might sound racist, but...
He wants a Kuzadasi Turkish bazaar salesman who's putting on the full Swami charm to sell his goods to an attractive British female tourist with ample cleavage on display.
This sounds like some odd fantasy.
It's a bit, like he's going to voice something. Okay. I recently went to see Spectre. What a disappointment. Never before have I sat in a Bond film and thought I could do better. Opening action scene, what a joke compared to any of the Pierce Brosnan action scenes, and it falls flat. Has anyone forgotten the tank chase scene in Russia in GoldenEye? The chase through London on boats in the world is not enough. I think the whole world has gone mad thinking Daniel Craig is a good Bond. He's not even a good actor. I could do better. So, if Barbara Broccoli is listening, come on, ditch Daniel and give Chris Dodd a chance. Mom, I won't let you down. Kind regards, Chris.
Much
love for the new Bonds there. I mean, I think they're overhyped and losing their soul somewhat. Or struggling to maintain sort of relevance in the modern world. But I like Casino Royale, and I think it's the best one in a long, long time. But I don't think Skyfall and Spectre are anything to celebrate, to be honest.
Even he was suggesting it was dated, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, the Brosnan ones, though, if you watch them, are also incredibly dated now.
I thought GoldenEye was all right.
Yeah, I rewatched it recently. I used to love GoldenEye, and I just found it a bit boring and a bit awkward and embarrassing.
Has it aged badly?
Yeah, I think it has. It has. But yes, well, there you go, Bond. What's it going to do to stay alive?
Here's a letter from Connor Lavelle. Dear David Marica, buddy, the action should be Irish, halfway between Bernard from Black Books or Dougal from Father Ted.
Are you all right with that?
Or just go with your usual Irishy one. For sure, tis grand to be sure. I'll do that one. I took your advice and went and watched Dear Zachary, knowing absolutely nothing about it. I agree that it was nothing like I'd seen before. I won't say anything that would take away from someone else's experience. But would you agree that while the storytelling is masterful from start to finish, some of the other filmmaking elements are a bit weak in the middle part? I also really enjoyed the review of Kajaki recently, but ex-military guy who said it was really authentic and close to his experience of being in the army. So it was.
I'm adding that. Yeah, adding that little details.
The film itself was excellent too. While writing from experience, it is not a guarantee that the script is going to be great. It sure doesn't hurt. I did it really badly. Okay, here is a question. What is the best bottle episode movie you've seen? I'd have to say Barry, directed by Rodrigo Cortez and carried by a great performance by Ryan Reynolds, is up there for me. Keep watching the films. Con. P.S. Since Domhnall Gleeson's name will be coming up a lot with Star Wars 7 on the way, you should probably know that his first name is pronounced Donal.
Donal?
Donal.
Like donut.
Donal.
Donal.
Oh, and Saoirse Ronan's first name is pronounced Saoirse.
Yeah, because we didn't know. We didn't
Saoirse.
Know. She's in Brooklyn, isn't she?
Yeah, Saoirse.
Saoirse and
Donal.
Donal. Good to know.
Thanks very much, Connor. Some people
like writing letters. So, what was his question there? Best bottle episode films. I don't know what you call them when they're films, because they're not episodes, are they? It tends to be something they do with very low budgets, because obviously shooting in one location really lowers the cost of things. There's some fantastic ones out there. Buried, he's mentioned already, I think is good. I enjoyed it. Ryan Reynolds.
You enjoyed the car Buried one, Underground. Didn't you? What's his name?
Locke. Yeah, mm-hmm. Locke with Tom Hardy in a car for the whole thing. People laugh about it now because of the sequels, but actually Saw, the first Saw film, is very good. I think there is some stuff outside of that room, actually, as well, if I recall. But the stuff with Carrie Ells and your other man chained to radiators in a bathroom with a dead man in between them is all very good.
My friend Paul Allen told me a load of bottle episodes, and one of the most ingenious ones.
Yeah.
I reviewed one recently this year, which I thought the action was good. This one was a horror one. Cube came out about 10 years ago. Yeah.
Is it a bottle episode? Because they've used one set, but it's technically a sprawling, enormous...
But that's what they've done is. They've used the same... I think it counts as one set, but they've used science fiction to make it, to replicate it.
Classic ones that everyone celebrates now, and now that I've seen it, I can join in celebrating
12 Angry Men.
12 Angry Men, and Rear Window. As well,
yes,
which is all in one room, and look, like a voyeur. What other good ones are there?
There's quite a few there.
There are.
There's
quite
one
a
in
few.
The lift. Is it called Devil?
Devil. That's an M. Night Shyamalan, isn't it?
Well, I quite enjoyed
Shyamalan.
That
didn't
the
see it. Reservoir Dogs. Reservoir Dogs is all one room, apart from the stuff at the beginning. But then it's all in one warehouse, isn't it?
Yes.
Pretty much. Apart from the stuff, you know, walking down the street.
Would it count as a bottle episode? Probably would.
Well, almost. Phone Booth? Have you seen Phone Booth? Colin Farrell in a phone booth?
Yes, I thought it was all right.
It's okay, isn't it?
There's a lot there.
There's a lot. They can be really good, but that whole thing of restrictions tend to force you to be more creative than you would otherwise have been, you know? I think some of the best writing is done with a single location.
I might set Bowie Man in a single location.
What location would that be?
Toilets.
A toilet. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
No one's done that, have they?
What, set a film about a superhero bumming man in a toilet? I don't think anyone's done that.
Well, not saying he's a superhero.
Have you not?
No.
Oh, what is he? Why is he,
you
don't he called
know, Bumming Man's my long-running film that I haven't mentioned for about 6 months.
But Merrick's trying to get it off the ground as a movie, very slowly. But
that would help if it was in a bottle episode, wouldn't it?
It would help a lot. It would help a lot. Have you talked about casting of the Bumming Man yet? Who are you looking for? Who's your number one choice?
Well, I need to look at people's bums first.
Sure, sure. Is that not on Spotlight?
No.
The actors' database.
There should be a body part.
Spot
one.
Bum.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people
like writing letters. Okay, are there any more this week, or is that?
There's a couple of Christmas ones and films of the year ones.
Well, we'll read those out in later episodes.
Yes, we'll just do one then. That's not a Christmassy.
Okay, who's this from? This is from Duncan McMillan. He says he was going to ask for a strong Scottish/Fife accent, but on hearing David's accent, recent attempt at that accent, maybe not, unless Merrick would like to have a go. Well, do you want to have a go at Fife?
No, I do not.
No? I just did it as a schemey Scotsman.
Oh, do
which I think is utterly fair. I mean, everyone from Fife. Jesus. Right. my family's from that region. I feel obliged to do this.
Okay.
Hey, buddy, David and Marek. Having just listened to your recent podcast in which you discussed the Eddie Marsan film Still Life, you mentioned that you hadn't as yet seen Filth, starring the aforementioned Eddie Marsan and Joanne Froggatt. At the time, I was extremely surprised that James McAvoy was not among the BAFTA nominees for Best Actor. That got me to thinking, although I thought he gave an excellent solo performance as Bruce Robertson, the homophobic, racist, sexist police officer in the adaptation of Irvine Welsh's novel, was it my own Scottish perspective that clouded my judgment? Or was it that his performance wasn't any better than the other nominees? Bruce Dern, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Christian Bale, Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks, who for the majority weren't British. I know that he was awarded Best Actor for this role at the British Independent Film Awards, the Empire Awards and, unsurprisingly, the Scottish BAFTAs, as well as being awarded the British Actor of the Year by the London Critics Circle in 2014, which might lead you to think he merited a nomination. I would appreciate your thoughts on both James McAvoy's performance, if you get round to watching Filth, and on BAFTA's lack of recognition for predominantly British actors at a British Film Awards celebration. Thanks for your insight and knowledge in all your years of the Film Fandango podcast. Yours, Duncan. I haven't seen Filth. Have you seen Filth?
No, I haven't seen it.
He's riding a pig, isn't he, on the poster? He's a policeman, and it seems a bit like almost like a Scottish version of what's it called? That one with Harvey Keitel they remade with Nicolas Cage about the piggy lieutenant. What's it called?
Oh, Bad Lieutenant.
Bad Lieutenant, yeah. Bad Lieutenant. It's sort of that sort of corrupt, crazy, drug-taking cop, isn't it? It looks good. I mean, his performance looks excellent.
I started reading the book ages ago.
Yeah?
I don't think that he should be nominated because he did Welcome to the Punch, one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Sure.
So I think that would have taken
it down. Just like Eddie Murphy when he was nominated but then produced that film Norbit and so wasn't allowed to win.
Yeah, I think your average should go down if you realise you could do a terrible film.
No, fair enough, really. Well, that's our letters for this week. I've also seen a film, Marek.
Oh, before we leave the letters thing, should we say that we're in the upcoming weeks at the end of the year, we're going to do our top 10 or top 7 films?
Yeah, we're going to do a rundown in a couple of weeks' time of our favourite films of the year. So if you've got any that you absolutely loved that came out this year, or you'd just like to put your votes in, then do email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, or you can put them on our Facebook wall, or message us on Facebook, /filmfandango. You can tweet us, I guess. We'll collate them all together. That's @filmfandango. Or you can talk to us @MrDavidReed and @MarekLarwood. And we will run down our favourite films of the year in 2 weeks' time. Great. I've seen a film this week.
Oh, yeah.
I was one on a bit of a punt, actually. I'd heard about it recently. It's just gone from cinema release to streaming, so I was able to watch it.
Did you use that streaming program that you...
Oh, that's not a streaming program, the one we talked about before, the one Gemma Arrowsmith suggested, Just Watch. It's just an app that tells you where everything is on. But no, I didn't, actually. I just was told about this film, actually. It's called The Gift. And it's. I knew very little about it other than it starred Jason Bateman and Rebecca Hall, both of whom I like. Jason Bateman, you may know from Arrested Development, where he plays Michael, the main character in it. And he's also in the Horrible Bosses movies, amongst other things.
And Teen Wolf.
Is he in Teen Wolf?
Teen Wolf 2.
Is he? What's he in Teen Wolf 2?
He was the The werewolf in Teen Wolf 2.
A long time ago, really? Yeah, when he was it really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's also in Hancock, that Will Smith homeless superhero film. And then Rebecca Hall, who's in everything and is great. This film is about a couple who move to a new town.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, and that's it. They move back to his hometown, in fact. And they end up very soon, in fact the day they move in, somebody rings on the doorbell. No, I'm getting it wrong.
Knocks on the door.
No, they bump into a guy at a department store when they're buying furniture for their new place, and it's an old friend seemingly from the guy's school, and he's like, hey, I haven't seen you in years, wow, you look so different, blah blah blah. And then that very afternoon that guy rings on the doorbell and is just a bit socially weird, where he doesn't read social cues and they're starting to worry. He thinks they're now best friends.
This sounds like a French film.
Right.
I watched years ago, I've talked about, called Harry, He's Here to Help.
Harry, He's Here to Help.
It's about a couple, a family driving across to move somewhere new, and they meet at a service station, and he talks about this story he wrote in the school newspaper he was obsessed with.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I'll Google that. But basically, it's what happens with this guy who's called Gordo, or that's his nickname anyway, and their past they had together, because they weren't even friends at high school either. It was just, you know, someone in his year.
Yeah.
You know, and how it just, it's quite creepy. And it's a small thriller that's, you know, it's not all set in one place, but it's largely around the house, and in the early days has the feeling that it's going to turn into a home invasion film, you know? And it's far more mature and cleverer than that. It surprises you where this film goes, and I won't spoil it. What was the biggest surprise is on reading about it, this film is both written and the directorial debut of Joel Edgerton, who is also he also plays Gordo in it.
But he's Hollywood's. He was great in the Warrior.
In Warrior with Tom Hardy, he's Tom Hardy's brother, the incredibly stacked UFC fighter.
Yeah.
And he wrote and directed this. This is his first film, and I have to say, for a debut, it's great. It's really good, and it doesn't go where you'd expect it to. It's smart. It's not perfect, but it is really, really fun. And it's a proper thriller that avoids cliches really well. You know, in thrillers, it's always like, yeah, well, of course they went there, and they do. Yeah.
What did you watch on? I asked what.
I watched it on Blinkbox.
I might watch this. It looks quite good.
It is good fun. It's good fun.
So I can't believe that he is actually has a time while he's in all these Hollywood blockbusters to write and direct films.
Yes. Yes, what he's done a bit of writing before, in that let me get this right.
Warrior is one of the most. I watched Warrior thinking it's a rubbish fighting film, and I took a punt on it.
Yeah,
and Warrior is brilliant.
Phenomenal. If people haven't watched Warrior, it's almost like stealthily making testosterone men watch a film about feelings. Like, it's a phenomenally good film.
It's, and also the 141 in the IMDb charts.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It deserves to be. Nick Nolte's performance as their alcoholic dad is
the whole
heartbreakingly
thing is a real,
brilliant.
If you like Rocky, I never really liked Rocky. He's better than that.
Yeah. Well, Joel Edgerton wrote the story for a film called The Rover that came out in 2014, and that. You may remember it looked a bit Mad Maxy and had Guy Pearce and Robert Pattinson, the guy from Twilight, in
it. Is he Australian? He is Australian, is he?
Joel Edgerton, I'm not sure, but all those guys are, so that sounds likely. No, Robert Pattinson's not Australian, is he? He's British. Anyway, talking rubbish. The Gift is a good thriller, and it deserves to do well, I'd say. Give him more stuff to do. This was really interesting.
That's great. I'm,
very I'm, well written.
I look forward to watching that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's not much more to say about it. Have you seen Joel Edgerton in anything else apart from Warrior?
Yes. He has been in... I'm looking at Animal... Oh, and the other film that is absolutely amazing is... he was in Animal Kingdom.
I didn't see Animal Kingdom.
Which was, Ben Mendelsohn's in it as well, Guy Pearce is in it. It's about a family of criminals, and there's follows the story of a boy. His family are all these horrible murderers and criminals.
Yeah,
it's really bleak. It's absolutely brilliant.
Great.
So I would watch. He was also in
and that was a good year for him, because he also played Metal Beak in Legend of the Guardians, The Owls of Gahul.
Oh, Great Gatsby, I've seen him in. I've not seen Black Masters up now. He was in
The Thing, wasn't he? The remake of The Thing.
Exodus, which I did not go and watch. It looked terrible, the big budget.
They keep making massive fantasy films based upon Bible stories set in the Middle East and casting the whitest people they can find. Because there was another one that's yet to come out. It's coming out soon, and everyone is super white in it. It's really weird.
There's trailers for Moby Dick out at the moment. It's called The Heart of the Sea or something.
Oh, yeah.
It looks really shit.
Does it?
These epic films, they haven't really got... Nowhere they didn't really get right. They haven't really got any of these...
Is it because the stories in the Bible are actually bollocks? Is that why? They're just not very good stories?
I don't know, David. I'm trying to find Heart of the Sea. So I'm looking on IMDb. I mean, you might as well not listen to this podcast. Just go
on IMDb yourself.
Just spend half an hour on IMDb, and then it's just the same thing, really.
Just sort of burbling to yourself. And that'll be the same. I think that'll probably do. But Joel Edgerton, turns out, not just a pretty face.
Well, he's done some good films. Well done, Joel, and I expect we'll be hearing some more from you in 2016. Buddy just come to give me a kiss. Buddy's the dog, David's dog.
Buddy, the podcast dog. If you'd like to do a jingle for every part of this show so we can slowly reduce the amount of content, then please do.
Here comes the police sirens.
Yeah, that would be good. We sporadically get adverts at the beginning and end. I hope they're tolerable. Do tell us if they're not. But we have done those because we do this podcast for free, and we would like to continue to do so. So if you've enjoyed the podcast in the past or want to enjoy it in the future and would like to donate towards our running costs, then you can go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the links from there. And everyone who's donated so far, thank you very much. You are the bestest. We'll be back next week for our Christmas/Star Wars episode. So that's an exciting one, isn't it?
Well, if you're looking forward to Star Wars
film. Or Christmas, you know. I mean, if you hate both of those things, or are indifferent to them, you know.
Well, if you hate Christmas, you're probably the only person that should listen to this on Christmas Day.
Yeah, if you are a Jewish Star Trek fan, then maybe that, just don't listen to it. Maybe not for you. But, you know.
Well, any other sort of religion.
Yeah, religion, or, you know, if you hate sci-fi. Then, you know, we're trying to be as ubiquitous and easy, as universal as possible.
If you hate God, you listen to the right podcast.
We'll be back next week.
Keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.